This is Careers in New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit the website douglasewelch.com/newmedia. Well, hello everyone and welcome. Today we are talking with Peter Lithgow from Weymouth in the UK along the lovely southern seashore of England. Thank you for joining us today, Peter.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here. Nice to talk to you finally.
Yes, really. We've talked over Facebook a lot and we've kind of chatted online, but it's nice to see you face to face and actually get to talk to you. My wife and I and my whole family are all Anglophiles, as it were, here in the US. So I always love to hear the accent and I always love to hear what's going on there. I actually still subscribe to a few blogs over there from Bath and some other places simply to keep my hand in and what's going on.
Right. I actually don't come from Weymouth. I come from the north, Derbyshire. We came down here about 30 odd years ago, and we've loved living here ever since.
Well, I must say, my wife has family in Sicily, so we often travel there, but we have made it to the UK a couple times now, and I really enjoy it when we're there. We had our last trip, we were in Cardiff for a while. We went to Bath, went to Stonehenge, and then spent some time in London. The last trip, my son was only 2.5, so he didn't remember a whole lot about the city. So we had to show him some of the sites where he could actually remember them at, you know, age 12.
Yeah, sure.
So
I think the last time I went to Stonehenge, I was a film extra. I did some film extra work for Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Oh,
so
okay.
That was fun.
Which version? Let me say, it seems like there's a version about every 5 to 10 years of all the.
I think it was a TV version.
Oh, okay.
So it was great.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you today specifically was about podcasting, new media, as right. I sometimes call it. And in our discussions together, you actually participated in our Christmas Carol reading last Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to your show, and one of the things that struck me was its local focus. I think these days we sometimes miss out the fact, because local radio and television is struggling, but the podcasting has this local element. Yes, you can have a global audience, but there's also a very local element to a lot of our podcasts. So why don't you tell me, how did you get started with your podcast? And the podcast is the Zip and Company podcast show, right?
That's right. I guess how it all started, I've been interested by media most of my life. And I sort of broke into the tail end of the film business, becoming a projectionist at a cinema in the north. Then I progressed. When we moved down here, I wrote a neighborhood news column for the local newspaper. And then I wrote local news for a regional newspaper down here, basically the same thing. And I guess I wanted to expand my audience, as it were, grow a bigger audience. And I couldn't figure out how to do it. And then I found podcasting. And then that just fascinated me, and it has done ever since.
Did you have any background in audio or video or anything like that before, beyond the projectionist work?
I guess with the video, I went to a secondary modern school here, and we were one of the first schools to experiment with Super 8.
Oh, gosh.
Film. Yeah?
Yep.
And we borrowed a projector and a cine camera from the Parent Teacher Association, and we made a couple of films at school. So I helped write scripts and build props and things for that. And the interest in video and cine stuff has come from there. With the podcasting, I had no experience at all. I had to find out everything myself.
And it sounds like all of us, we kind of had to learn on our own and talk with each other and figure out what microphone and what mixing board or, you know, what USB microphone or whatever to put together. When did you actually start your podcast?
Oh, it must be a couple of years ago now. Yeah. I think the problem with me is that I work nights, midnight till 7, and I also now do a couple of hours work during the day. So I have to try to squeeze in the podcasting wherever I can. I'd like to do more, but it's just the time.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of people. Myself, I'm a computer consultant by trade, slowly moving into consulting about podcasting and new media and other things. But yeah, it is a problem sometimes wedging it into the time you have available, especially for someone like yourself who's going off and filming the sailboat races or doing the introduction for the various events that are going on in town. You've got to figure out how to get to those people at the right time of day to connect up with them too.
That's right. I actually do a YouTube channel. I don't know whether you've seen that, where I film local authors. But luckily, there's a local bookshop that has signing days. So I can actually go and film them there. And it helps them sell the books. It really does.
That's a question I had in my list here, was what sort of reactions do you get from the authors and the local musicians you interview? Are they surprised? Do they know what podcasting is? Are they kind of like, podcast? What's this crazy podcast thing? Or what kind of response do you get?
Yeah, a few of them do, a few of them don't. Local authors, I try to explain to them basically it's like a radio station on the internet. They can understand that. The concept of podcasting, they don't grasp.
Yeah, that's been my experience too.
I tried to tell them that with radio and newspapers, the report or whatever it is there and gone. Whereas with podcasting, it's always there. They can go back to previous shows and hear themselves for as long as the feed stays up.
Right, and they can refer other people back from their website. They can link to that show and have a reasonable expectation that show is going to be there for a while. So, yeah, that's actually something that I really hadn't thought about reinforcing with people, but that's actually a great idea, saying there's an archive of this stuff, and, you know, if you have a good enough description on there as well, a textual description, Google searches will turn them up and other searches will turn them up. So that's actually a good way of presenting it to them, definitely.
Well, on the video feeds on YouTube, on the author's page, I actually do links back to the publishers or places where the people can buy the books. So they can see the video, click on the link, and buy the book.
Which is so important. Even living here in LA, I have to talk with people all the time about how to make something out of this new media tool, how to use it to sell their book or to sell their movie or their TV or their video or whatever. And even here in Los Angeles, I still kind of get the blank stare sometimes of, oh, you mean I can make a link and they can buy my book right there? And it's like, yeah, you can.
yeah. And I say to all the authors and the bookshops and people, they can take the videos and use them wherever they wish. Take the embed code from YouTube and just embed it on the sites, and there's no charge. And they seem quite excited with that.
It's a win-win. It really is. You know, it's a bit of a cliche phrase this day, but I really believe that. You win because you get content for your podcast and your YouTube channel, but then you're also helping out these artists who maybe don't have other expansive avenues to get their word out. So I do try to set that up with them there. It's, you know, we're both going to get something out of this.
That's right. They seem quite happy. As I say, they do sell their books. They do pay attention, which they wouldn't get otherwise. As I say, they'd be in local radio or local newspapers, and the report is there and gone.
What do you think are this kind of the special aspects of doing a local podcast, a podcast where you are reporting on the community you're living in?
I think with local radio and local newspapers, there's a little bit of editing that goes on to put a slant on the story that they want to put on it. I don't edit it at all. I take out the ums and ahs and things in the conversation, of course. But the author or the artist themselves is in their words.
You're giving them an opportunity to say exactly what they want to say.
That's right. There's nobody more willing to promote the goods than the artist or the musician themselves. Mm-hmm. They know what they want to say about it.
Exactly.
You know, that's the beauty of podcasting. That's the beauty of the video.
Have you found that by doing these interviews that you've come across material that perhaps you wouldn't have thought about before that has interested you, something that's just cropped up and it's like, oh, well, that's a cool book. I really haven't thought of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Many times I've done things like I was recently here at a something called a North Fort, which was it's a sort of reenactment place.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're having a reenactment day, and it was part of a children's school class. And I suddenly got an idea for this story, this book. But I don't know how to write it, so I'll have to see. I'll have to find an author who can do it.
One line at a time. As a writer, one line at a time. That's how you're writing.
And it would be the view of some modern children who came to Weymouth and got somehow transported back into the past, into the time of Sherlock Holmes. And they joined the Baker Street Irregulars.
Very cool.
And helping Sherlock Holmes with the case.
Okay. I expect to see that, the first draft, in about 3 months. And I'm a big pusher. I push people on these things. It's a great idea.
These situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very similar to what I find, where, you know, you're just out and you're doing something and you're talking to someone who's like, well, I didn't know anything about that aspect of history. I didn't know anything about that particular branch of science or whatever like that. So I'm always coming across interesting stuff that I wouldn't otherwise come across if I wasn't doing the podcast and talking to these people.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess because I did the neighborhood news for the Echo, I came to understand that people are fascinating because you never know what you're going to get. You know, ideas, concepts, it's always fascinating to talk to people.
I love that idea. I think that is so clear. And I think it's where podcasting really can excel, because you can just, I mean, I've done something like, you know, man on the street interviews sometimes, and or you just meet someone who's really neat and you're like, you know, can we talk on the recorder here? I would love to just interview you. As part of my career work, I like to find people who have really unique jobs that other people don't really know anything about.
Right.
Television writer, you know, songwriter, gig player on albums or whatever like that, and introduce people to those jobs through talking with these people who do it on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a local character who sadly passed away, Trevor Lawrence, and I always tried to get him to talk to me about what he'd done, but he never would. And I knew that he was a brilliant musician. He was a brilliant painter also. But only after he passed away did I find out that he shared flat with David Bowie early in his career. He also did background matte painting for 2001 of Space Odyssey. He just never told anybody these things. To him, they were just things that happened. You know, it would have been wonderful to try to get him on the show, but he never would talk to anybody about things.
Yeah. That is a great reason, though, to try and get people to talk to you. Because I have some stories like that myself. I have some amazing people in my life, and they're a little skittish about the recorder or about the video camera, and they just can't bring themselves to come and do it. It's like, no, you understand. You have some very important and interesting things to say. We should capture this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's infuriating when you get somebody like that that you try to talk to them and try to do it, but they just won't.
Yeah, I call it the producer's dilemma. You know, you're sitting there, you've got your producer hat on, going, "I gotta capture this stuff. Oh my god, this is great stuff!" And you know, they won't let you in the door, and it's like, no, you don't understand.
They just hold on to the beliefs.
Yeah,
and it's crazy. I'm always looking for interesting people, always.
I think that's a good general rule for anyone doing something like this, whether local or global or whatever is. I think we forget sometimes how many interesting people we have in our own neighborhoods. And I try to get people to look more at that, and that's a, hence my interest in your local, you know, podcast.
Sure.
About how many square miles are we talking? How big of an area do you kind of cover in your podcast?
Well, mainly because I can't travel very far at the moment. It's just Weymouth, Dorchester, and Portland. But I'm willing to get email news. I have a call-in telephone line, so people can leave messages for me that way, and those will get put in the cast. So it could be anywhere in Dorset, really.
Cool. So you, again, the electronic tools give you a little bit more expansive ability to cover things if you get people to get news into you then.
That's right. I also have a mobile app I developed for the iPhone and Android, so people can get that if they want. Just send me an email, and I'll send them a link. It isn't actually in the Apple iStore yet because that costs a little bit of money to put in there.
Yeah.
But that's no problem. I can send them a link, and they can install that on the phone and listen to the shows and see the videos on the phone.
Oh, that's great. And again, you know, we think about this stuff happening today, and I just, you know, 10 years ago, this was science fiction, you know, really
was.
Right. Now we're able to, or even, you know, to stream live from the waterfront, for example, with your phone. It's just like, I can't even believe you can do that these days.
I'm taking my wife to London for a bit of just a tourist trip on the 5th, and I'll be doing videos on social cam and Twitter and MySpace from there as well, I guess.
Oh, I'll be sure to watch that.
On the pad here.
Whenever we watch the TV shows and stuff, I'm always like, "Oh, been there, stood right there, rode that." It's very funny when you see, because living in LA, we see LA on TV a lot in America because a lot of their shows film there. A lot of them film elsewhere now as well. But you'll be watching the show and go, "Oh, that's like three blocks up on the left," you know. But now we also get that with the UK and with London and Cardiff especially. And then we also get that in some sense. There's a show in Italy called Inspector Commissario Mantovano that films in a town we've now visited in Sicily with a family. And we'll be watching that show and going, "Oh my gosh, that's right around the corner from the little restaurant." Yes. So it's kind of odd.
Yeah, a few years ago now, I actually came to San Francisco. And it's an amazing, crazy town.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't mind me saying.
No, it's even for us in LA, it's a crazy town.
And you see TV programs here, and I can recognize places that I walked. I must have walked all of those seven hills.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, San Francisco is fairly small. The actual city of San Francisco on that peninsula is actually a fairly small city that's surrounded by, you know, a metroplex, as we say, of Oakland and all the other cities. But, yeah, if you walk the peninsula, you've seen pretty much where they do all the filming there.
Yes. The crazy up and down roads. I must have walked up and down those footpaths many times while I was there for the month.
I got lazy and I would walk around the perimeter. We actually, by accident, walked up and down the steepest street in San Francisco, which isn't Lombard Street, the one with the twisty, windy road. It's called Filbert. It's like one over. And just by accident, that's the hill we walked up one day. It's like, I'm not going to do that again. Let me ask you, Peter, do you find yourself working with the local government or with the local shopkeepers or the shopkeeper associations, anything? Are any of those people willing to work with you for promoting stuff and getting you material for your podcast?
I'd guess the only lady that I've found so far is the owner of the bookshop.
Mm.
It's very hard to get other people involved or interested. I've had great problems getting the local press interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're a competitor now.
I suppose in the local radio station. Many years ago, we never had any local radio stations here at one time. And I was on one of the committees that tried to get a radio station here. There were five groups who applied for the license, and Wessex FM actually got the license. But I guess I started tr- trying to get people interested in having a radio station here by writing letters to mayors and all kinds of politicians. And a lot of them said, who would want it and who would pay for it? But now it's here. It's one of the top local radio stations in the country. Mm. So somebody has wanted it and somebody has paid for it.
Yeah, that's the type of thing you run into sometimes.
I've had no help from local radio stations and newspapers at all.
Yeah, it's a bit tough. It's a different world. I mean, in early days of podcasting, a lot of radio people did kind of jump on podcasting because it was a way for them to do things that they had wanted to do but couldn't do within the confines of traditional radio. But there was there's a different way of thinking about it can make it difficult to bridge that gap sometimes. So definitely.
Yeah, I think it is. To try to explain to people that they can subscribe to something for free and there's no charge. They expect there to be a charge.
Right.
And then they say to me, well, how do you make your money out of it? I said, well, I don't, because I'm employed full time doing other things. So they expect you to. I get the feeling that they think it's some kind of con.
Yeah, it is. It can be a little hard because when you use the word subscribe, of course, people think, oh, I have to pay for this. I have to pay for my subscription. So I'm always careful to explain it for you. You can subscribe for free. Interesting. Maybe we can brainstorm a little later, maybe some ways to help you reach out a little bit, because it's something that I try to do. As I mentioned last Christmas, we did the podcaster Christmas Carol reading. And that's one of my ways, which I kind of reach out to people and give them something fun to listen to gain an understanding of. And, you know, this is a podcast. This is something that, you know, that the community put together.
Sure.
I do like that community feeling whenever you can bring it about. And I think it does help to drive stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to do more of that kind of stuff, you know.
That's a great segue.
I recently did some bumpers for The Weird Show. Mm-hmm. The Incaffeinated one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's used them, and I was really pleased that he used them. So I'd like to do more, maybe voiceovers or things like that I can get involved in.
I think that's very important. I was talking, for whatever reason, I've had a lot of voiceover people come into my life lately here in L.A., in fact, the other night I was just consulting, basically. One of my friends recently moved to Denver, Colorado, and met up with a group of voiceover people there. And he had been involved in our live Christmas Carol reading that we do each year here at my house, but in the studio that you see behind you.
Right.
And he thought it'd be a great idea for the voiceover people there. So I was explaining to them again, you know, what it is and how we do it. And how it can be used as a fundraiser for whatever charity you would like, which is something I've been wanting to do here in LA. So whenever anyone wants to do one of these readings somewhere else, it's like, here's something I've wanted to do. Make it a fundraiser. Have a canned food drive. Do something with it, and do it live. My wife and I and some very close friends are old theater people. I actually have a degree in theater, of all things. And it's one of the ways that we get to exercise that theater muscle a little bit each year. By doing this live show.
Yeah. I'd love to get involved. One of the things that I've done recently is I'm helping promote a local band called the Zag Band, Z-A-A-G Band. And they've just released the first album. And I did some voiceover work for them for the second album. I play a character on the album. So that should be released within the next couple of months, I guess. So it's getting the name of the Zip & Co. podcast out there in many ways.
Yeah, it's so important to do that. It's so important to, you know, promote yourself. And promote can be, to some people can be a dirty word, but there are good ways of promoting yourself and giving back to the community. For me, is one of the big ways I do that. So. I'm sure that's going to generate some interest for you.
I hope so. I carried a promo for another local podcast in Dorchester on this morning, and his numbers went up. his listener numbers went up. So it shows that when you share, good things can happen.
Got to share the wealth. Got to share the wealth. That's something that, you know, I've said from the very beginning of podcasting, and I endeavor to do myself. And one of the things that attracted me to your podcast, of course, is that you're doing the same thing. You're promoting those events in Weymouth and in the surrounding area. You're bringing people down there. You're showing people what fun there is to be had in an event. Again, because a lot of people may not know what goes on at the actually, there was a motorboat race. I remember I heard you talking about interviewing the organizer of.
Oh, yes. The cats. Yeah, I know which one you mean. Yeah.
And, you know, explaining to them how you watch these races and why they're fun and why they're interested in the history behind them. And it helps to bring people out because you've given them the entree. You've given them you've opened the door a little bit to them so that they don't feel uncomfortable coming in and saying, well, now I know something of what this is about. Let's go see this.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm never quite sure what the local press say about this stuff. I'm giving, as I said before, I'm giving the organizer, the author, the artist, the freedom to say whatever they wish to say about it. Mm-hmm. And I feel that they tell the truth.
Yeah, and of course, if they don't, if you bump up against something where they're, you know, where you're kind of like, you know, I find that, you know, we as hosts of podcasts are the proxy for the listener. We're their stand-in. And if we have a question, well, the listeners are probably going to have a question too. So it's worth, you know, popping up that question and saying, hey, how about this? So it is true. I really like to give people an opportunity to discuss their projects in their own voice because the passion comes across.
That's right.
I think sometimes we don't see that passion come across in mainstream media because it's so heavily edited or so heavily scripted. But I want to see the passion. I want to see the interest in the person. I want to see why they take the time to do all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and a lot of the author interviews that I've done on YouTube, the author explains how he came to write the book. What triggered the thought to write the book? His history, why gave the book the name? Odd stories, which I like.
I think that's
the human interest part of it.
I think people, as a listener myself, I love to peek behind the curtain. I love to see hear the backstage stories and hear about the origin of certain things. To me, that's extremely interesting. And I know in my talking with other people and listeners and in general that's something that they really enjoy. I mean, one of the things that, as an example, the Doctor Who Confidential series that was on after every episode was like, oh, that is so cool to, you know, peek behind the curtain of how they do this television show, even though we live in the heart of, you know, TV and I know how it's done. My wife's a television writer. But it's still great to look behind things and see people being normal people while creating something very special.
Yes. Yeah. I guess that's why I enjoy doing the film extra work as well, because you can see the film from the other side. So I guess I've been involved in media for a long time, doing the things that I do. The film extra work, projectionists, podcasting, writing for newspapers. I had poetry published in about 6 or 7 different anthologies over the years. I guess I've been involved in media for a long time. Only not professionally, if you will.
Yeah, and I'm all for that. I do a lot of different things. If people look at my website, they, you know, the comment I often get is, you do too much. And it's all over the place, from gardening to career consulting to computer consulting to technology to, you know, podcasting to everything else. So I think, though, for most people, that's what you need to do. You need to explore those things that interest you most. So it sounds like you've had this underlying interest in media this whole time, and you just need to let it have full flower.
Yeah. I'd love to write a book, a proper one this time. But it's just the time. If I could find a way to make money doing what I love doing, the podcasting and the video, then I would just do it.
That's the thing. I mean, I have actually, I kind of have a success story of my own. I actually got a spokesperson position for a garden equipment manufacturer here in the U.S., mainly because I was just writing my gardening blog, and they discovered me, and we did some barter arrangements for a couple years, and all of a sudden they decided they wanted a full-on, what they called their Saturday Six. They hired six bloggers across the country to continue blogging on their own blogs, but also do some special stuff for them. And so I look at that and say, it's possible. The less time you have to dedicate it, the longer it's going to take, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. You know, that's why I ask you about your local shopkeepers, your local governments and stuff like that is, you know, one way of financing, quote unquote, your operation, of course, is to bring in some sponsorship from local businesses and local organizations around you and, do barter with, you know, local charities and say, I want to do this for you. And then if you could you put out, you know, could you let people in your list know about the podcast where this interview is held and stuff like that, where, again, it's a win-win.
Yeah. Well, I try to cover a lot of local charities on the cast now.
I heard the interview with the local, what we would call a thrift shop here in America. I forget the actual, what term you use over there, but it was one of the, I think it was a church secondhand shop. And you were talking with the person about how it's organized and how they run it and get the materials. And I think there was a component of people in the community being able to learn trades and stuff through them and something like that.
I think you can remember that one. But I also did one with a workshop that repairs bicycles.
That was it. That's the one. Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. He's still going. He's doing very well. But I try to cover charities that can't afford a lot of publicity themselves.
Right. I mean, help the ones that need the help the most.
Yeah. There are lots of big charities that spend an awful lot of money on publicity. But I try to find the smaller charities that can't afford to do that, that need help too.
Yeah, one of the phrases I use is I like to help the underseen and the underheard. Those right. neat people that you run into in your daily life that go, you know, more people need to know about you. And thankfully, you know, between us, we have that ability to raise their profile just a little bit, at least introduce them to our listeners and people who can perhaps do them a little good, help them out and help them succeed with their mission.
Yeah. I always let them know that the interview is online via email, send them emails and things. But it's very hard to get any kind of response. I have to physically go and see them and say, did you listen to this? Did you? And it does get a little exasperating at times.
Yeah. Well, because they're probably not that technically savvy. And so you're having to educate them a little bit about this can go on your website. And, you know, what I find is like, who does your website? Oh, let me talk to them. And, you know, you ship them an embed code and bam, it's up. Because, you know, they know about that world where the average person doesn't. So I understand entirely what you're saying. It's like I have to handhold people sometimes for their own good. You know, I want them to get some promotion. And sometimes, you know, when I can, I do try to handhold them through the process. And hopefully that'll, you know, they'll learn more in the future as you go on.
Mm. I think one of the problems locally is the local TV station here and the local radio stations are larger organizations. Mm-hmm. They're owned by chains.
Right, yeah.
If you will. Yeah?
That's something that happens here in the U.S. too.
So all the programs are basically the same all over the chain. So you don't really get an awful lot of local coverage, local people talking about local things. That's where I can help.
I think that is the number one place that you and other podcasters can help. I have bemoaned the loss of true local media over the last 20 years. And when I saw podcasting, that was one of the things that appeared to, you know, came to my mind was, oh, we can actually do local media again, something that's focused on my neighborhood. Even here in LA, you know, the news, the local news can tell me about what happened in the government and across the world and all that. But frankly, I want to know why the helicopter was circling above my head for 3 hours last night. That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Well, I had the idea of setting up a local internet TV station here that would have podcasts to go with it and mobile apps and whatever, because I do that already. But that would be run by local people with local views, and maybe take videos from other local people who want to get on the station. So that would be truly a local station, but available worldwide.
I would highly encourage you to do that. We often visit places. We visited the small agricultural, yet a bit of a resort town up in the hills to the north of us. I was in a play, the first time I've acted in 25 years since I got my degree, basically. But we were playing up there, and I started wandering around and talking to some of the kind of movers and shakers in the small town, and it became very clear that they needed their own TV station. Yes, it would be based online, but for relatively little to no expense, and just the energy of the people involved who already had an energy that desired to promote the town, they could do this. And I really tried, I did everything I could to pump them up about the idea that, yes, you have to do this. It is so beneficial to you and everyone who lives here.
That's right. I try to promote that as much as I can. But then again, you've got the local press, the local radio, local TV. You don't even mention it at all.
Yeah.
Because maybe they think that's competition for them. But it isn't. It's just normal, ordinary people doing something extraordinary.
And I think that's the way to think about it. And I think people can do that. So I'm going to push you just like I push everyone else I talk to. You know, yeah, connect up with some like-minded people and definitely do it. I really see such a huge benefit to doing something like that. I think in a lot of cases, it can help a community come together more.
Sure.
Feel a little less disconnected. You know, the whole thing of, well, you don't know who your neighbors to your left or your right are and that type of thing. Even in smaller towns, I think it can really help that a lot. And it can help to surface maybe some issues that are there in the town that need to be addressed, but no one's really talking about.
That's right. There used to be a magazine many years ago here that did that. But the editor sadly passed away, and it just became defunct.
Right.
But that caused a little chaos when it was here, which is good because it was a creative chaos and got people scared, I guess.
I think there is a need for that. There's a need to, you know, shake things up a little bit. Sometimes we can get really, you know, locked into our quote unquote normal everyday lives, and we need a little kick in the seat of the pants sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think podcasting can provide that because it is an independent voice. For the most part, it is the voice of one person or a small group of people, hopefully in a local community, and it'll draw from that community to get those necessary discussions out there.
Yeah, I think so. I would really like to get together with other people and create that station.
Mm-hmm.
They think that Weymouth had a lot of publicity during the Olympics, but with the station, I'm sure that publicity would continue.
You have to continue. You have to keep that momentum going, definitely.
Yeah. But that's where I'm coming from with the podcasting, and I'll continue to do this for as long as I can.
And that's a great part about it. You can, you know, it doesn't, you dedicate it to the time, dedicate to it the time you can and the energy you have, and that let it be what it be. And then if you can expand it in the future, you do.
Yeah. With my shows, I think I throw in all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that I can collect together, anything that I think is important. The actor friend that I told you about who sadly passed away, I got three of his friends to call in and leave little memories about him.
Oh, that's nice.
So on the next show, I'm going to edit those together and just do a little tribute to him.
Oh, that's great. That's dead on. That is, it's one of those things that, that podcasts and local podcasts can do that, that really nobody else has the ability to do these days.
The local media wouldn't do it.
No, it's too small of a story for them, especially if they're owned by a larger corporation. It's just too small of a story.
That's right. I'm also going to put in the first chapter of my fantasy comedy novel that I created, like a little audio cast about. So I'm going to try that. So it's just things that I find that I'd like to try.
I like it. I think that's exactly what podcasting is all about.
It gives you the freedom to try new things, definitely.
Freedom. Freedom is the big word. I use that a lot when I'm talking to people. It's freedom for the producer. It's freedom for the listener to find materials that they might not otherwise find in a larger environment. It's freedom for the stories to come out that need to come out. I preach on that all the time.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen a lot of your videos, and I fully endorse what you say.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Peter. It's been a pleasure to listen to the podcast. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And
it's a great pleasure to talk to you, too.
We'll have to see if we can get some projects going across the ocean here, maybe.
That would be great fun.
Another thing that podcasting facilitates very easily.
Yeah. My wife and I are maybe coming over to Los Angeles next year to see one of her relatives.
Oh, so, goodness.
Who knows?
Please stop by. We'll take you out to dinner. We'll take you out for coffee. We'll take you to Hollywood.
That'd be wonderful.
I live only about 6 miles from Hollywood Boulevard, so it's a little bit different for us than it is for some people. It would be a pleasure to see you. Why don't you let people know exactly where they can find out about your podcast, where they can find the shows?
Yes, if they go to my show notes at www.zip, that's spelled zzipp.podomatic.com. They can click on the play button there. They can also subscribe via iTunes. Just click on the iTunes button. They can access my YouTube feed by going to www.youtube.com/Zipster, ZZIPPSTER. And there they can see the artist interviews and all kinds of other stuff that I'm interested in.
Oh, that sounds great. Please, guys, everyone who's listening and watching, please check that out. I don't live near Weymouth, but I love listening in and seeing little slices of life from around the world, especially in the UK, which we really, really love to visit. So thank you again, Peter. I wish you a happy rest of the weekend. I know it's late for you, so I guess you're about ready to go off to work then, if you're working evenings, right?
No, I'm off weekend. I go back Monday night.
Okay, well, enjoy the rest of your evening there, and it's been a pleasure. Have a great night.
Thank you very much, and have a great rest of the day.
This is Careers in New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit the website, douglasewelch.com/newmedia.